Geisler's first book, The Philosophy of Religion, he divides the philosophy of religion into four major divisions. It deals with religious experience, God and reason, religious language, and then the problem of evil. And so our authors want to just touch briefly on each of these subjects in turn.
We're going to talk about the problem of evil yet again. We're going to be masters yeah, of evil soon.
That's right. Well, okay, we probably already are, but I won't go there.
By nature, that's yes. Right. Well, the first one is religious experience. And so the issue dominating the first part of Geisler's philosophy of religion is whether experiences of God or the supernatural can be considered rational. Geisler argues that they can because the history of mankind, secular and sacred, supports the thesis that by nature, man has an irresistible urge to transcend himself. We're always thinking of what's up there, what's out there, what's above us. What, you know, there's got to be more to life than this. All the Disney songs, the girl, the princess wants more. They want to go out. It's ingrained in our storytelling. But nevertheless, he argues that verification is necessary to discern that there really is a God to fulfill the human need for transcendence.
Right. So it's, yes, we have this kind of need for transcendence. We have, you know, this religious experience longings. But he's arguing here that it takes more than just that to show that God exists. And so he moves to God and reason. He talks about that verification can be found in philosophical theistic proofs. So in the second section of his book, it's entitled God and Reason, Geisler examines the function of theistic proofs. And in this section, he defends a version of the cosmological argument, right? That causality and contingency and that kind of thing.
All the good ones, yes.
Yeah.
Well, next, the third part is for religious language. So the third part of his book focuses on the problem of religious language. So even back then, we're arguing about Christianese and whether or not it's a good thing. a little different. Okay. Yeah. Well, even if a sound argument for the existence of God can be made, how can we intelligently speak about that which transcends all experience? You know, I think Dawkins has made this point. Neil deGrasse Tyson has. Oh, you know, if there was a God, it would be the same thing as us communicating with ants. It's just not possible. Oh, well, okay. It might be a little different if we made the ants, and we would probably want to find a way to communicate with our creation some way. So the metaphor is lost on me for that one. But,
yeah. Well, I communicate with ants when I, you know,
step on them.
Yeah, when I step on them, they stick. You know, when I spray down my porch, they that communicates stay away, and they stay away. Go That's figure, right?
If, for some odd reason, they don't abide by the property rights that I maintain in contractual form. So, I might have to use a different persuasive means there. So okay, so how can we ascend to knowledge that is above us is what Geisler is saying. Geisler maintains that every negation implies a prior affirmation, and that therefore purely negative God talk is meaningless. The positive knowledge of God implies by negative God talk requires that language about God be understood univocally as having an identity of meaning when referring to both God and creatures, to avoid a descent into religious skepticism.
Right. Yeah. So there is a meaning. There is, at least in some way of looking at it, some of the things that we talk about is the same way that and see things is the same way that God does. Or at least let's put it this way. Some of the way that God sees things is the same way that we do. So there's a univocal, at least in some of our religious language, is what he's getting at there. Mm-hmm. All right. So he's dealt with now religious experience, God and reason, religious language. And then finally, of course, he jumps on the problem of evil, right? And he says in the fourth and final part of his philosophy of religion, he considers three ways to relate God and evil. The first, atheism, affirms the existence of evil but denies the existence of God. And so Geisler argues here that although God has not yet destroyed evil, he will do so, and in a way that leads to the best possible world. The second alternative from atheism that, you know, God doesn't exist is illusionism, right? This is the denial of the reality of evil. And Geisler points out here that illusionism cannot account satisfactorily for the origin of the illusion of evil. And then the third alternative affirms that both God, though not necessarily biblical God, and evil kind of exist. And some options in this category, excuse me, that he talks about are dualism, finite godism, sadism, and these are incompatible, he argues, with theism.
Well, after examining the alternatives available to the theistic God, Geisler concludes that the morally best world is better than a morally good world or than no moral world at all. So that this world, despite its temporary degradation due to sin, is the best way to the best world will eventually be confirmed at the end of history in the final judgment. Right. So, you know, not to belabor the point, we've talked about this with Scott Christensen's What About Evil? And so this is at least Geisler's take on how to fulfill the biblical Christian God with the presence of evil.
Yeah. Good. All right. The next, what our authors do is take us to Geisler's book on Christian apologetics. And here they suggest that this textbook on apologetics is divided into three parts. In the first part, he considers how to test competing truth claims. And then having chosen a test for truth, so he chooses one, he applies it to the major worldviews in the second part and argues that theism, the view that the world was created by God who was able to perform miracles, is the true worldview. And then finally, in the third part, he presents evidence in support of Christian theism. So he gives, in the first part then, how to test competing worldviews, and we'll see those in just a second. And then he applies that to the major worldviews, and then we finally come to the place where the Christian faith then seems to be the best one.
And so first is the discussion of his apologetic method. Geisler critically evaluates seven methodological approaches to the question of God: agnosticism, rationalism, fideism, experientialism, evidentialism, pragmatism, and combinationalism. He concludes that each of these epistemological methods makes a contribution, right? So it's got something good about it, but is inadequate as a test for truth. In their place, he proposes uniformability as the test for falsehood of a worldview, and undeniably as the test for the truth of the worldview. So right. Is it unable to be affirmed, or is it unable to be denied?
Right, exactly. And so using these two tests then, unaffirmability and undeniability, Geisler seeks to demonstrate that all the non-theistic worldviews are directly or indirectly unaffirmable, right? They can't be affirmed, at least logically speaking. And only theism is affirmable and undeniable. And so he examines several competing worldviews: deism, pantheism, panentheism, atheism, and he argues that all of them fail the tests for truth that he has given us here.
Well, and then finally, Christian apologetics. He says, having established the validity of the theistic worldview, Geisler then deals with miracles, the role of history, and the establishment of historical reliability of the New Testament, the deity and authority of Jesus, and finally, the inspiration and authority of the Bible. So there's kind of your second approach. So right. We've established the answers that are possible. He's whittled them down to say that they're not good answers. He's provided a secondary answer that he believes is the best explanation. And now he's going to say, within the scope of that theistic argument, here's the main Christian argument, and that's the thrust here of the historicity of the Bible, of the New Testament especially, and then who Jesus is, and then the inspiration and authority of the Bible in specific general.
Right, and so we see again this kind of two-step approach, right? So you show that God exists. A particular kind of God exists, the theistic God, and then Christianity meets that theistic God that he's shown to exist.